your host, Jeff Ragavan, and welcome to the Alchemy Podcast, where we're on a quest to explore the intersection of cannabis, compliance, and creative in the marketing world today and beyond. Welcome back to another exciting episode of Alchemy. Co-hosting with me today, my brother from another mother, Chad Bronstein, founder and CEO at Philo. And we've got two very special guests, Katie Ford, head of global brands at Twitter, and Clive Zirkin, former CMO at Kimberly-Clark and former chief growth officer at Kellogg's. Guys, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
Perfect way to spend Friday afternoon.
Great to have you. So guys, you know, I think one thing that I thought would be fun to kind of kick the show off is, you know, you both have pretty extensive and pretty deep roots, not only in the, you know, creative and agency world, but in the brand world. And I thought it'd be nice just to talk to us a little bit about, for one, how did you guys even get, you know, connected into the cannabis world? And also, you guys are board members at Philo. So maybe talk to us about how that happened. Katie, maybe we'll start with you.
Yeah. Well, I spent 25 years on the agency side, specifically on the account side, on the media side of the business, in which Clive and I worked together on the Kellogg's business. And while I was running some key accounts, I met Chad Bronstein, specifically on the Coca-Cola business. And he was working at a company called Amobi at the time. And we did a deal. I actually took a pretty large bet. We were actually doing a wartime room for the Super Bowl, and we needed some tech background of actually how we understand the sentiment for the Super Bowl so we could put the right message at the right time to the right audience. And I remember he was aggressive, but with passion of saying, listen, we can do this for you, Katie. So I took a leap, and they killed it. They did an awesome war room for the Super Bowl. It was the accolades of actually how Coca-Cola rose to the top was unprecedented. The client was happy. They were sitting in the room with Wieden Kennedy and Twitter and Facebook. And that was the beginning of a beautiful relationship that Chad and I actually have today. And it goes back about 7 or 8 years. Fast forward about in 2017, Chad convinced me to come to a company where he was at as CRO, Amobi, and I joined as chief client officer. And I did it, A, because I wanted to partner with Chad, but also I wanted to learn the tech side. I wanted to learn the platform side and work with engineers and understand the programmatic side of the business. And so I made a pretty fast right turn from the agency side to going to the tech side. And it was a fantastic learning curve for us. It was a great partnership with Chad and I going out and meeting best-in-class clients and actually teaching them about programmatic, teaching them about tech, and building first, you know, best-in-class insights product that actually helped the programmatic world. And then I was actually kind of drafted from a friend to go to Twitter, and it wasn't on my roadmap per se, but during a time in between going from Amobi to Twitter, there was a gap in time. And Chad and I said, let's go do our thing. Like, what do you want to do? And the concept, it was pre-Philo, but it was a concept of actually, how do we use our background of branding and technology and apply it to a growth sector? And we really bore the idea of actually cannabis is the hottest category. Neither of us knew anything about cannabis. But what we did know is we knew and had relationships with key clients, C-suite clients, and we knew technology. We knew how to use data to actually drive targeting. And so, you know, Chad actually made a hard, you know, right turn in terms of actually creating the company. And I said, hey, I'll join as a board member and we'll figure out, you know, where our future actually goes. And that's how we kind of bore the idea. And at first it was very just only focus on the tech industry with a precision marketing of actually, because the opportunity was that we had to actually hit different geos with different messages, and data and technology was going to be the only way to do it. And we knew that the big platforms, Google and Facebook, were not ready to go in that space yet because it was unregulated. So we took the lack of regulation as an opportunity to create a company, and Chad, you know, ran with it. And so I actually played, you know, a backseat role in terms of actually being from the board member. So that was how I got into it. It's been amazing to see Chad and team and the leadership team that he's actually assembled thrive in the last 10 months and actually get the funding and actually build even further the roadmap and the proprietary insights tools that they have and become a leader in the industry that was not even actually existent less than 10 months ago or really a year ago.
And how about you, Clive?
Somewhat similar story, but different roads. So two ways into the business. One, as the industry has evolved and gotten more developed and more sophisticated, there's, not surprisingly, has been a drive to get more conventional, if you will, marketers, more marketers with CPG background. And so I've got a number of calls for both helping companies to secure talent, which I helped a number of companies, and then also to advise and consult. So I had a number of relationships in the past year and a half, 2 years, where I've been advising more CBD, but also cannabis companies. But then ironically or not, so ironically, Katie and I, who, as she said, we go back a long, long time, were talking about it, I'd say a year ago, and she encouraged me to get and talk to Chad. She didn't realize that Chad and I had sort of known each other very similarly. We'd done a lot of business in his days, both when I was at Kimberly-Clark and at Kellogg's, and I developed a very fast respect for him for all the reasons Katie had mentioned. But she's encouraged me to connect with Chad. We met for a coffee and, within a week, not surprisingly, I agreed to join the board. Philo just was blown away by Chad and reminded me of how aggressive and outstanding he was back in the days of Amobi and pre-Amobi, frankly. But also the proposition of Philo and the team that he'd put together and the board that he put together. So the rest, as you say, is history. But the small world, Katie having a history with Chad, and Chad and I have a history and Katie putting us together. So I have to credit Katie as much as it kills me.
I love it.
Just so everyone, all the listeners, Katie became my younger sister when she worked with me at Amobi. And the memories, as she was talking about that, you forget about all the memories, but there's so many different memories. But me and Katie traveled literally, Jeff, everywhere together for like 2 years.
I'm sure you guys have had a lot of stories that I'm looking forward to hearing from both of you separately.
Philo's lucky to have Clive and Katie, and I learned a lot from both of them.
Thank you, brother.
You know, both you, Katie and Clive, the question goes to both you guys. You obviously both have a lot of expertise in CPG, which is where you come from. You know, how do you see cannabis obviously relating to CPG, and where do you see it over the next 3 years going?
So nowadays, a lot of times CPG is classified as EDW. So eat, drink, and be well is a classification. I kind of like that because it spans not only the classic consumer packaged goods, but then it goes into beverage and the QSR. And I think that's going to be Philo's sweet spot. And I think right now, working with a cannabis regulatory company as Philo's positioned, people are like unsure of actually how to actually get in. Is it coming from an innovation fund? Should they go into an R&D area? And so there's still a little bit of caution. They know it's actually going to be a growth category on two fronts. One, an audience that is so critical, so important and so engaged and so loyal. And then two, if they actually have R&D hemp, CBD, cannabis products in their pipeline. So they're trying to learn it from both angles. But I think there is a proceed with caution mindset. And so a lot of times it's not in the mainstream teams for them to decide if they're going to, lean their way in or not. And so I think in the next 3 years, it will go mainstream. When Philo builds there as they're doing it very quickly, the overall data set that is going to be critically important, they'll go there first, and then they're actually leaning into their R&D of how they launch products. And those two worlds will actually then converge as to a team specifically in the cannabis CBD driven or area. Because I work across the beverage sector, the CPG sector, and everyone's talking about it. but they're talking about it at a very high macro level of the future versus some of the stuff today. So getting a test with them, having them lean into the importance of the segment and showing a return on investment will be critical to see how we can scale that. And then the other thing is working with the R&D teams that are building CBD or cannabis infused products will be the other opportunity. And it's not a matter of if, it's just a matter of when it will scale. And my prediction is that it will scale definitely, COVID or not COVID, driven within the next 24 to 36 months.
Great insight.
I completely agree with Katie. I mean, the category is here to stay, and there is only one trajectory that's viable and not likely, it's predictable, which is it's going to expand and scale. And it's going to expand and scale to mainstream, both through endemic companies that, and you can see the ones that are out there, through consolidation and organic growth and acquisition that grow. It's going to scale where traditional, if you will, CPG packaged goods companies, as well as, you know, vice, what I would call vice companies, alcohol and tobacco, and aggressively continue to go into there. And then they are going to acquire companies. So there's no question about it that the category is going to scale, and it's going to scale faster than I think people have historically thought, particularly as companies are looking for more growth. And particularly as the legislative and regulatory environment evolves in a positive way. I think, Katie, you make a good point in terms of how that scales and who the critical people are right now in terms of doing that, particularly in the more mainstream conventional companies. That's going to vary. It's going to vary from the small sort of innovation and breakthrough innovation groups within the large companies. It's going to scale within the R&D organization with the companies. And I think critically, the regulatory and legal departments within the large companies are going to be key stakeholders, particularly as more conservative companies are concerned about blowback, if you will, on two levels. One, sort of regulatory, legislative compliance issues, but also perception and reputation issues. And, you know, having sat on that side of the equation at a board level, that is a real issue and a real challenge. And the more and more becomes accepted mainstream, the less and less the resistance is going to be. But so I think, you know, it's not going to be shocking or surprising. Those companies that are in the conventional mainstream world, if you will, that have a history of being more progressive are going to be the first movers. Those that have a history of being more conventional are going to be the later movers. The sequencing is not critical. The reality is, I think the big players and small players are going to move faster, and it's going to be accelerating. And I think your view on, you know, 24 months or inside of 24 months is a good bet in terms of a critical mass and scale.
So, guys, I have a couple of interesting data points that I've seen in the last couple months, and one of them obviously being the pretty big movement of the traditional marketers who are at, you know, the J&Js and the Kellogg's and Kimberly Clark's and Unilever's. They are literally moving over to, you know, CMO positions, leading, you know, strategic marketing initiatives at a lot of these multi-state operators in the cannabis world. And just recently, for 420, there was a great deal of creative that was being pushed out by traditional brands. So, you know, some of the ones that we see every year, Ben and Jerry's did a whole thing around, you know, legalization, really standing up for, you know, cannabis legalization. But then there was some really interesting creatives that made us almost scratch our head for a moment. There was, it was H&R Block and also TurboTax in Canada that really pushed out messaging around 420, and we're really talking to people on how there are certain allowable medical expenses with cannabis. And so to see that in 2020, I think was a kind of a very big eye opener for many brands. And I think this is going to start moving the needle even more, because this is a new occasion. It's a new segment to go after. And I'm just curious, you know, from you guys and, you know, the different brands that you're talking to, like, is this kind of the critical moment where everything is about to explode, where the brands are actually saying, yes, we want to target those people?
I think that it's a signal of an inflection point, without a doubt. I mean, I think there were two points in your question, Jeff. One was the movement of traditional CPG marketing talent into the cannabis world. I think that's a separate topic, and it's worthy of a discussion later on. But I think the core point in your question about conventional established brands looking at the cannabis market and saying, we may not get into that, for example, TurboTax, but we see that as a viable segment that we need to market to, whether we market them tax advice or whether we are a food company and marketing them because there's a consumption opportunity on the back of cannabis consumption. Both of those, for me, are indicative of the inflection point of this category evolving both from inside and outside. And I think we're going to increasing focus on that.
Yeah.
Katie, I'm sure you're seeing it from your vantage point too.
Yeah. And the thing is, it's really interesting. The brands you identified, some are a little bit of a surprising, but it comes from the top. If you have a strong CMO that says, listen, we're going to test our way into it, we're going to still tie it to the brand and utility that we actually drive, but we're going to actually have a very directed message to what we think is a great opportunity segment. And honestly, it takes just a informed and smart CMO or strong top marketing, director to actually take that leap and then to see the payback. So the thing that, Philo and other cannabis companies need to do is be able to track, right, the return on investment, that like when we talk to this important group, we see an uptick in our business. And as soon as that return on investment is actually saved, it will explode. It will explode within the portfolio of brands that they currently have, and then it will explode across the category because everyone actually is enthralled with what the other is doing. So as soon as, as you said, TurboTax did it, H&R, is scratching their head going, boy, that's an opportunity. Or as soon as Ben & Jerry's is doing it, said other, confectionery or, ice cream marketers are going to do it. Same thing with, the White Castles of the world. They may be less risk adverse than McDonald's, but they're all actually kind of going after a similar market. So they, the big boys will actually see what the small, more agile marketers are doing, and they'll get on the bandwagon. So I think that kudos to the brands that moved forward, and it is it's opening the door for it to scale quickly.
And not just CMOs, but I think if executive teams, CEOs and the executive teams are not sitting down and saying, how do I expand my addressable market? They're going to decline. They're not going to grow. It's basic math. But if they're not in the context of that conversation saying cannabis and CBD users represent a route to expanding the addressable market, they're not doing their job. That's one. And two, all roads lead to data. And the ability for those people to get a hold of the data that gets to the users and to create segments and go after them is gold. And they should be, if they're not already, they should be all over that. And that's what I'm advising the boards that I'm on.
I think, like me and Jeff, and Jeff just, he's been here for like 2 months. It feels like a decade. Clive, you obviously being, and Katie both, working on P&G and Coke and Clive, Kimberly-Clark and Kellogg's, when I was on the technology side and the data side, we always heard like data became stale, right? Because you guys only had so much you can target. And what's been fun for Jeff and I, we're building obviously Philo and the data side of it is, it's interesting for them to think of a new way to target a user that, maybe a user theirs may not be, but all the different data points you can get from cannabis, I think is what we've seen a lot of people lean in to understand that because data is so stale and who their audiences are. Do you guys agree with that?
100%.
Yeah. And the fact that you guys are creating a connected data segment that is tied to point of sale and purchase is kind of the holy grail. You know, it's going to be, especially when you actually have a few tests to, as I said before, to show the return on investment. It's going to be super, super important. And there's going to be some brands that are just going to jump, especially as they see the impact to their business.
I think from a segment perspective, if you look at, you know, the cross-section of, let's just say, a consumer who might be buying a wide range of different products in the cannabis space, you know, you've got people who are on the whole spectrum of health and wellness and sports, right? And then you've got the folks that are, you know, out there to have a good time. Then you've got people who are looking for pain relief. And you just have all of these different occasions. Somebody might be hungry. Somebody might be thirsty. Somebody might be looking to take their health and brain power to the next level using CBD and whatnot. And so it's kind of interesting as we're having all these, you know, strategic conversations with brands, like everything is starting to come together in a very integrated fashion. And we're having a really good time, and you know, because there is no one out there actually tackling this because the data's never been there before. So it's fun.
Clive, I think a great example of this was fun for me was you introduced me to your cousin at General Mills, and without me saying, she got it right away, where she's like, a Tostitas user may be a stoner, right? Someone that's or smoking pre-rolls or just, it doesn't be a stoner, but someone just maybe getting hungry. And a Luna Bar user would be your premium mom or dad that's 25 to 54 that buys premium CBD, right? So I thought that was like your cousin hit the nail on the head with the ability to expand audiences and get creative.
Absolutely. And I would imagine that most smart, intuitive entrepreneurial marketers are thinking like that and going, my brand doesn't live in a vacuum. I'm part of a repertoire. And the human who consumes me does all kinds of other things. And all judgment aside, they drink brews and they have cannabis and they do everything else. And so I think smart marketers need to start thinking about their target segments relative to what they use and what else is in the basket. You know, don't get me started because I'll go on a tear about how, you know, companies that have portfolios of brands need to get out of thinking about just in a vacuum and in a silo about their one brand and start thinking across their portfolio and across what else is in the basket and understand them as shoppers and consumers across the basket. And that, again, all roads, not to beat a dead horse, all roads lead back to the data.
Anything that you guys have seen now that you've been involved in the space for a little bit of time, like anything that has really, you know, that you've looked at that could be really inspiring or even something that you're like, wow, that's very cool. I didn't know that existed.
I mean, inspiring from what Philo's doing is just the insight analysis, because it's very akin to, once again, the traditional, what it takes and what a platform provides. So the fact that within 10 months, Compass actually exists, there's an insight engine that is specific to the geo that we can serve. These are tools and insight mechanisms that significantly bigger platforms have spent years and years and years to develop. And the fact that this has actually been developed in such quick time, I think the utility that it will actually serve to our clientele, and that's actually down to the dispensary level all the way up to a, you know, traditional CPG that they'll actually find. So I think that's super impressive. I also think the players that are coming into the cannabis space is important. As I look to the folks that you guys had on your overall podcast, from Jim Belushi to Al Harrington, you know, so from sports to actors to, you know, billion-dollar CEOs that are transitioned to the space, it shows the momentum and it shows the longevity of where this is going. It's not going away. It's only going to get more powerful and more people actually getting into the space because I see the future and the momentum.
Yeah, we're definitely at a turning point. That's for sure, right? It's good, right time, right place. And I will say, Katie, thanks for saying that about Compass. You know, we've been spending a lot of time with a lot of the MSOs and they're blown away by the technology.
Yep.
So, you know, a lot of them are just like, wow, we've never seen anything like this.
Yeah, and I would say that what also is cool about Compass is it translates to other industries as well.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, cannabis gives you kind of like the education that you need to have. It's the hardest education because of all the intricacies and the regulations. And then it's translatable into, you know, Clive set us up with one of his old employers to walk them through the platform, and they were impressed, you know, so it could translate really well, but definitely good, Jeff. Appreciate all your support and direction from both you guys on that side.
In addition to Katie's point, I think the thing that inspires me most and the thing that excites me most about the space broadly is because there isn't a historical legacy track record of the way it's done and the way it's thought of and established policies and protocols and processes and all of that stuff that is necessary for a mature business to operate, you know, with discipline, because that doesn't exist, there's so much innovation going on and there's so many talent people coming to the table who in a good way don't know any better or refuse to accept the conventions that you would typically accept in more mature industry and categories, and are doing things that at a speed that's incredible to innovate in the space. You know, and Philo is an example of that. But if you just look across some of the more established endemic companies and see what they're doing, they're doing incredibly smart things and incredibly entrepreneurial things. And, you know, one of the things that I sort of think about is as more and more conventional talent move from traditional CPG companies, they will bring with them a level of marketing sophistication and expertise, which is a good thing. But one of the things that I hope doesn't happen is they bring with them too much of the process and structure and conservatism that sort of has hurt a lot of the established conventional large-scale CPG companies. And I think the sweet spot is the best of both worlds coming together. And that's something that I'm really interested in as I look at companies. You know, if you look at what, for example, you know, Chad, what Mitch has done at Grassroots and how they've scaled that by marrying those two disciplines is a great example and something that I find really inspirational.
Yeah, I think that's such a good point, Clive. I think there's so, you know, look, Lisa, who's our CMO, who used to work with you and Katie, I think she would say the same thing because she's on the podcast, but you just hit the nail on the head. I think there's conventional players coming into the space, but you have to be okay with being uncomfortable because this space is so new. So I think that I 100% agree with that point. That's such a good point. But anyone that comes to space, Jeff coming in, anyone that comes to space has to realize it's new and you're going to have to be okay with the unknown because there's so many things happening in the space that change. You just have to be okay with being uncomfortable.
Yeah. Well said.
Very good. Well, guys, I know you've listened to the show before. We do business talk in the beginning, and then we do some quick fire questions at the end. Are you guys ready for this?
Let's do it.
Chad, you're doing it. All right.
What? I'm doing it?
Yes. All right, Chad, we'll start with you. You ready?
Yeah.
What's the worst purchase you've ever made?
Worst purchase ever made? It's a tough question. I made a lot of purchases, so I don't have to think.
You had to have made one purchase that you're like, oh, why did I waste that money?
There's a lot of those purchases.
I can help a friend. I'll help a friend. I had two really bad purchases. One, a dog. His name was Mushy, and we had to give him away like 2 weeks after we bought him. And then a 1996 used Land Rover that it looked really good, but it was a piece of shit. And so those were my two worst purchases.
I got one. It's not a purchase, but I approved the purchase. I'm trying to go for Father of the Year award. My daughter was going stir crazy being homebound. So I approved her buying hair dye and I let her dye my hair and my beard. Okay.
Just recently?
3 weeks ago. Subsequently, I've shaved everything off.
I want to see a picture. I need a picture.
Oh my God. I got to see it. Chad, we're going to give you a different question. What's your vice?
My vice. Bravo. Bravo.
Good to know. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I watch them all, like, Selena.
Real Housewives?
All the Real Housewives, Vanderpump Rules.
This is great. Now I know how to tease Chad.
Yeah.
Okay, Clive. Is it okay to sleep with socks on?
What? 100% good.
Yes.
You know why it's good? And I'll tell you the true story. When I first moved to America in 1985, I think, or 86, I lived in Dallas, Texas, and my first apartment didn't have proper air conditioning. It was 110 freaking degrees. And a person in the building next door said to me, if you sleep with socks that are wet with cold water and have a fan blowing on them, you're going to be good. And I swear to God, it actually worked. I know that's too much information. True story.
Okay, good to know. See, we find all these in amazing tidbits on the show. Katie, which is more preferable, being nice or being fair?
Being fair.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I like nice, but I like to be fair and nice. So it's prioritization.
Yeah, I like that thinking. Chad, would you rather explore a new planet or the deepest parts of the ocean?
New planet.
Okay. Clive, if you had to read an entire encyclopedia, which letter would you choose?
S. S.
S?
As in shit hot.
I thought you were going to say X because it's the shortest.
No, I'm evolving, Katie. I'm evolving.
All right. Final question for you three. Ready, Katie? We'll start with you. What's your favorite holiday?
Halloween.
Clive?
Weekends.
Chad?
Thanksgiving.
Nice. Well, guys, thank you for coming on the show. It was really great to get your insights. And, you know, obviously we love spending time with you guys, and you're fantastic board members and very dynamic and amazing leaders in the space. So it's great to, you know, add you to the mix of all the other great leaders that we've had on here.
Yeah, Katie and Clive, you're legends.
Legends.
Thank you, guys. You are legends. You're leading a legendary company. And thank you all for your leadership. You guys are fantastic.
A lot of fun working with you guys. Thank you for this.
Thanks, guys. This episode of the Alchemy Podcast was brought to you by Philo. Thanks for tuning in. And if you enjoyed today's show, don't forget to subscribe and share.